Welcome today to an interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an interview with Sean O'Driscoll, founder and chief evangelist for CGT Consulting. Sean is a world-leading authority on social media, community engagement, innovation, and a top-ranking business strategist, speaker, and thought leader. Sean, you have a world-leading exhaustive background in social media, which places tremendous demands upon your schedule. So we thank you for taking the time to do this interview.
Well, it's my pleasure to talk to your audience.
Sean, can you profile your current role and what were the catalysts to enter this field? And are you able to name some of the clients you're working with currently?
Sure, I'm happy to. So let me give a little bit of background, I guess. So I spent about 15 years at a major enterprise working at Microsoft. Most of that career really focused on customer-facing, customer intimacy sorts of roles. And starting from a customer service background, even answering the phones and saying, thank you for calling Microsoft. This is Sean. How can I help you? And over the last 5 years, being responsible for applying some social media practices to how the company thinks about help and support from a global perspective across an extremely wide set of products and audiences, from consumers to IT pros, to developers, and from products as diverse as Xbox and our SQL Server database platform products. So pretty diverse from that standpoint. A few months ago, I decided to leave Microsoft and start my own adventure, so to speak. And that adventure was really all about taking some of the lessons of learning the benefits of driving deep customer intimacy and building a consulting boutique around that discipline of how to drive deeper connections that are more meaningful between the brand or between the manufacturer and its users. And so that's really the core principle of the company I've formed. And I, of course, spend a lot of my time now focused on this topic of social media because I believe it's one of the most powerful tools available for driving that client intimacy objective. In terms of clients, it's a little early for me to get into that list. Most of them I'm actively engaged with now, and while I'm in process, I'd rather not get into all of the names. But at the same time, I can tell you that it represents high-tech, retail, entertainment, services companies, and from startups to gigantic enterprises. So a really diverse group of companies. It's been really fun to begin to learn how some of the knowledge and ideas formed over the past few years are transferable across industries.
Well, I know from some of the conversations, and I won't name any, but I know that you count Fortune companies amongst that list, so it's a pretty impressive list.
It's been a lucky starting point. I feel very blessed with many of the companies I've been able to work with.
From a business perspective, can you define social media and its impact on organizations?
That's a great question. I think a couple of things always come to mind. One is, I think social media is sort of a digitalization of what's already happens very naturally, right? Is the human condition is to share information. And sometimes I look at Web 1.0 properties or sort of the historical websites, and what you see is a very one-direction communication medium. Essentially, those websites are nothing more than publishing destinations. And whether there's 10 or 100 or 100,000 other users on that site at the same time as you is completely invisible to you as a user. And I think that's a big mistake. It's a big missed opportunity. Where you should be creating opportunities to demonstrate that shared presence, that participation by all those other users and the common interests and challenges that they have, and creating opportunities for them to gather and share with one another. People talk about social media sometimes as this really new thing, and in some ways I would argue that it's really not new at all, and in fact Charles Darwin probably first documented this whole notion of how groups of living things tend to gather to solve very immense problems. What has essentially happened is it's been digitized, and as all that conversation medium has been digitized, it's brought in a great deal more discoverability to knowledge and expertise across a much broader set of topics to all of its users. Now, with that discoverability, I think also comes more accountability. because now you can really see the conversations that are taking place about your company and your products. And so I think with that transparency, there's an associated accountability to get involved. And with that accountability, I think comes an associated opportunity for the business to learn more about how its users are using its products, how they'd like to use it in the future, and what challenges they may be having with the products, and how you more rapidly address those issues.
You know, do you have a sense of what the penetration is right now in this whole area of social media?
It's a great question. You know, if you look at individual participation in social networks, which might be one measure, I think I saw there was a press release just yesterday, actually, there's something like 23 million users in LinkedIn, for example, and both MySpace and Facebook are much larger than that. So I think penetration is certainly reaching a tipping point with some of the social sites. But when it comes to the corporate side, I think we're still very, very early. You know, I think that the corporate interest in the topic is exceptionally high. But it's much like right before the Web 1.0 wave in some ways. There's a lot of enthusiasm. I think, you know, I remember back before Web 1.0, we hit a tipping point where everybody's response was, wow, we have to have a website. And so we went out and we built websites. And I think we're hitting that same phase with Web 2.0 is now everyone's saying we have to have a blog, or we have to have a wiki, or we have to have a discussion forum. And so I think that piece has tipped over. You know, and there's an inherent danger in that. It's one thing to create a publishing site. I think it's a much bigger proposition to create a customer interaction site like a blog or a wiki or a forum. And so in some ways, I think the degree of difficulty for success is a little bit higher, and the level of planning that needs to go in is quite high. But nonetheless, I think that the interest level is at an extraordinarily high level.
And I guess that's the role that you play, though. You're that bridge, that catalyst to allow a sort of a measured approach so that organizations are going into this in a structured kind of way.
I certainly hope so. That's the business aspiration.
So what does social media then mean to content models?
Well, content is what this stuff is all about. You know, there's kinds of, I'll maybe break this crudely into two buckets. There are social sites like a MySpace or a Facebook, and those sites are really primarily, you know, they're first and foremost about connections, relationships between people. That's why people join, is to declare their relationships with others and to connect and share with others. Business communities are more about the content. Discussion boards in particular for help and support or help and how-to are really all about the content. And so, you know, any company that has a call center or has a large investment they make today in authoring content, whether it's help and how-to content or training materials or frequently asked questions content or documentation and manuals, has an opportunity to really think differently about their content model in the future. In fact, sometimes I say that communities formed around filling the gaps in the content that companies authored. And so the challenge becomes, how do you take advantage of all of that content that's being authored? And particularly if you're a global company, a global brand, much of the content that today you may be thinking about doing machine translation on is likely already being written by local enthusiasts in market in native language. And frankly, they'll do a much better job than your MT solution is likely to provide. And so I think that the content model just got a lot more complicated, frankly. And what companies are going to have to think through is what is the trust and reputation model associated with both the content pieces, the content types, whether it's video or documentation or other types, as well as the reputation of its contributor or its author, and creating programs that support both how you demonstrate the trustworthiness of those content, of that content and content sources, and the individuals in the communities are really important to all those users who just want to have a trustworthy answer when they go to a property.
So what are the kinds of inputs then that organizations need to listen to?
In terms of users, there's a couple of things I guess I think about. And maybe the way I think about this is is breaking it up into different dimensions, right? And I'll use Microsoft as an example. We spent a lot of time while I was at Microsoft looking at all of the conversations on the web and trying to understand what action to take. And to be honest, there were people out there like me who would say, you have to go participate in the conversation. And we'd look at that and we'd say, well, that seems like good advice. And then we'd go look at the conversations and we'd discover that there's a couple of billion of them about our brands and products and services. And they're happening in tens of thousands of places, destinations on the web, from Microsoft.com properties to third-party communities to offline user groups. And so this notion of go participate in the conversation, while it sounded intuitively right, really was a little too simplistic of advice. And so sometimes now I step back from that advice when I'm talking to other clients, and I say, look, you haven't listened. You know, if you're not listening to your communities now, don't worry. You know, you haven't listened for this long. Another few months isn't going to, you know, ruin the world. And so my advice in some ways is don't rush to participate. Rush to listen. And as you listen, start to figure out what categories those conversations fall into. Some of them are just about sentiment, whether or not I like you or I dislike you and your products. Some of those conversations are learning-oriented conversations, from pre-sales questions that people are investigating on Amazon.com, for example, before they buy a product, to post-sales questions about, now that they own a product, how do they get better use from it. Some of the conversations are association-related, meaning when people talk about your product, what else are they talking about? If you suddenly learned that 70% of the time people talked about your product, they also talked about healthcare, and you didn't know that before, what insight might that give you? Or what are those conversations look like with your biggest competitor? And are they different in really meaningful ways? Storytelling is another dimension. I describe this as accomplishments to aspirations. People have things that they're trying to accomplish. In tech, a classic example at home is I have a couple of TVs and a couple of computers and 50 people in my extended family that I want to share all of my digital photos and videos with of my kids. How do I do that? That's an aspiration that I may not know how to do. Yet there are a lot of people out there who have accomplished that task, and they've shared the best tips and tricks and how-to go do it on the web, whether it's in YouTube and in video-generated content or blogs or other places. And so tapping into those stories as ways to demonstrate success and how people accomplish things, I think, is also a very powerful tool. And the last dimension I think about is feedback. From pre-release to post-release, I wish your product would do X to why does your product do X kinds of conversations. And so those are probably the five dimensions I would first break this out into: sentiment, learning, association, storytelling, and feedback. And as you break it out, then figure out what the accountability model in your company is for taking action. Right? The marketing department may care deeply about the sentiment of conversations, how to leverage better storytelling, what the association model looks like. Your support executives probably care a lot about those learning conversations and how to tap into all those learning pieces of content as people are using the products. And your business units probably care a lot about those feedback conversations and how to put that into context with their other listening systems from a product design and product definition standpoint.
You know, it's kind of I think for many enterprises, it can be kind of a scary environment because, you know, where there's just so many conversations going, there's so many opportunities for conversations to occur. So can you comment on reputation management in this online environment?
Yeah, I think reputation is, you know, one of those critical pieces, particularly if you're in the consumer marketplace. You know, the way I tend to think of this is that most communities operate in a fairly similar mathematical way. There's about 70% of the audience that will come to your community that will likely do nothing but search and read and consume content. And so there are the masses of users that are leveraging this infrastructure. At the other extreme, you've got this 1% of people coming to your community who are extremely engaged. In fact, so engaged that you may scratch your head sometimes and wonder, what else do they do? They're so passionate about contributing content and information and about a particular product or service or technology. And so the challenge is, from a design standpoint, how do you optimize the experience for that 1%? Because they're critical to driving value and content into the system, while at the same time delivering trust and confidence to the 70% who are only there transactionally, but need to find the best answer. And so I think a key part of that is really thinking about a reputation model and applying reputation and status, both to content as well as to authors, as I mentioned earlier. So content can be marked and rated and or tagged that it indeed answered a question and provide levels of confidence. As well as authors or contributors can be given status or reputation in the system. At Microsoft, you know, we did that in a very broad way via a program experience we called the Most Valuable Professional, which was a designation we used to identify those one percenters that provided them status and reputation in those communities. And frankly, one of the things we found is that over time, as that brand gained equity, that answers written by MVPs when they used their logo in their answer in forums were oftentimes viewed 50 to 60 times more frequently than other answers in that community. So I think that influencer model is clearly one of those most important assets as you think broadly about growing a community strategy.
So can you provide your perspective then on conversations and learning enabled through social media?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things that I would think through, just from a tactical standpoint. One is breaking it. The first step, I think, is that listening process, and then deciding what categories all those conversations fit into, and then really deciding what are you going to do about it. You know, I've also seen sort of the crime of creating conversations and then not participating in them. And so I think it's incredibly important for an organization to think about process and procedure change behind the scenes for once they open the doors to all these conversations, what accountability are they putting in place to take action for it to close the loop back with their users? And so I think that's a really important dimension on this. And then the learning can really come from a couple of different things. One is how you think about product feedback in the system and how you're listening to product suggestions and recommendations, or it's through the content and really thinking about the content that you're capturing and how does it feed that learning part of the value proposition for the 70% of lurkers that are out there. So is the content help and how-to content? Is it pre-sales content or is it post-sales content? And how do you organize it in a way that's discoverable for your users? And so I think those are some of the big issues. But I think, you know, the first step is deciding how wide are you going to cast that net, which conversations matter most, which business problem you're trying to solve, and how do you put an organizational structure in place that's going to support taking action on that as a business.
So I guess that's a natural segue then into this sort of question of, you know, what is social media strategy?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I'll start by what it's not, and it's what I see a lot, right? A social media strategy is not a checklist. You know, it's not, hey, we got to have a blog, and we have to have a wiki, and we have to utilize Twitter to monitor conversations about our products. It's not an idea engine like Dell's Idea Storm. Those are all instances of utilizing social media, but they're not strategy. And too often I see this rush to deploy. And frankly, deploying some of these tools is pretty easy. You know, I wouldn't consider myself technical, but I could probably deploy a wiki. In fact, I did create a wiki for a group of friends yesterday. And it took me less than 5 minutes to create a wiki in wet paint. So deployment's easy and the wrong thing to celebrate. Social media strategy is really much more about stepping back and going through a process of understanding what business problem are you trying to solve, right? It kind of goes back to the beginning in a way, right? Sometimes I ask, you know, how does social media change your business objectives? And for 99% of the companies out there, that is a trick question. It doesn't, right? Even before Web 1.0, we had the same business objectives. We needed to drive the acquisition of new users. We needed to reduce cost. We needed to drive satisfaction and loyalty. We needed to drive brand equity. We needed to drive revenue, right? These were the classic pillars of business scorecards. And guess what? Social media hasn't changed that. Our scorecards are essentially the same. And so step one, I think, is really deciding what problem are we really trying to solve? Do we see this as a strategy to drive satisfaction? Do we see it as a strategy to drive loyalty? Do we see it as a strategy to drive reach or expand our touch with our users? Do we see it as a strategy to drive cost out of our content acquisition model? Do we see it as a strategy to drive product improvement as a listening system? And the challenge is it could serve all of those goals, and you'll probably fail if you try to attack all of them at the same time. So decide what that one thing is, and then build your approach out from that, and really think about it in I guess, maybe six pillars from a strategy development standpoint. Number one is people. How do you go identify the elite contributors to the community? Number two, places, which is how wide do you cast that net? Where are the most valued conversations that address the business opportunity that you're prioritizing? Third is process. What systems or tools need to be in place inside our company to drive accountability for the listening that we're now doing? Fourth is platform. What's the infrastructure needed to support the conversation? What's the reputation model, authentication model, all of those pieces? Fifth, what are the patterns? And what? How do we think about pattern recognition of the behaviors of those who are contributing to the communities and the ideas that they're generating? And can we set up systems and automation to recognize those patterns so that we can make the patterns actionable back to our business units? And number six, participation. What is our brand's commitment personally to go out and engage in those community conversations? While I think it's possible to have community be successful without you, the company, being a part of that community, I think the degree of difficulty is quite high, and I think you miss a tremendous amount of the value by not being an equal and a peer participant in the community with your users.
Kind of delve in further into things like loyalty and influencer programs using social media. Can you comment further?
Yeah, loyalty is you know, I have a talk I give sometimes about this notion of what I describe as three pillars: satisfaction, loyalty, and affinity. Satisfaction is what many of us have been measuring from a corporate standpoint for a long time, and you know, it could be as simple as satisfaction with a product, or satisfaction with a service, or satisfaction with a transaction. How did we do in that support phone call? And satisfaction is a nice transactional measure. Actually, it's not predictive of future behavior, so you're not convinced of what action someone's going to take in the future, but it can help you fine-tune some of your business processes and some of your transactions. So measuring satisfactions is a fine thing. Now you read more and more about this notion of net promoter or loyalty, and people are now measuring what's often referred to under that as likelihood to recommend. And I love the likelihood to recommend metaphor, right? It's, you know, how likely is a user who bought my stuff to recommend to his friends, family, and colleague or other users that this is a good product to use? And it's a great measure. It is predictive of future behavior. It can certainly tell you a lot more about where your business is heading versus where your business has been. But sometimes people think of loyalty as the end destination, and I think that's where my challenge comes into this, is I then think about something I refer to as affinity. So if satisfaction is I like you and loyalty is I recommend you, then I would describe affinity as I defend you. Someone says your product can't do something, and someone goes out of their way to who doesn't work for you to show up to the conversation and say, yes, it can, and here's how. And crudely, sometimes the analogy I use is what I call the ugly baby principle, right? As if you ask a room of 100 people if they've ever seen an ugly baby, most of us will acknowledge that at some point we saw a baby that wasn't exactly beautiful. May grow up beautiful, great, but when we saw it, wasn't exactly beautiful. But if you ask that same group of 100 people who had one, everybody's hand goes down. No one's ever had one. And so the takeaway or the brand lesson in this is that parents are incredibly brand loyal because they give birth to their children. And so the business opportunity or the business lesson in this is, how do you create birthright for your users, for your customers? How do you give them a voice back into the product design and product definition, into the content and the content model, into the reputation and utility of what's being designed and developed? And at that point in time where your customers are part of the innovation process, your ability to create behaviors that look like affinity, that I defend your brand, are substantially higher. And so to me, that's the ultimate brand destination. And it's not about moving all of your customers to that affinity bucket, which is a pretty expensive proposition. But it's finding that 1% who are the most connected and the most communicative about your products and services, and creating unique opportunities for them to connect all the way back into your business processes from a product feedback standpoint, and really, you know, making that bidirectional, giving them a voice in the innovation that's coming in the future.
That's quite interesting. And can you further contrast this influence framework and Web 1 versus Web 2?
Yeah, I mean, I would think of it in the following way. In Web 1.0, pretty much every company had a product cycle. Of course, it's basically the same cycle today, right? You design and envision, you test and develop, and you sell and deploy, or some version of that. Whether you make sandwiches or software, there's some sort of product cycle associated with it. And I think what's changed, both from a practical standpoint and from an opportunity standpoint, is that in Web 1.0, probably 100% of the people who touched the envision and develop phase of your product cycle worked for your company. Probably 95%, 98% of the people who touched your product in the test and release phase worked for your company. And it was really only in the post-release phase where large numbers of external people were using your products and beginning to talk about your products. So the influence model really was a post-production process, right? It was mostly about support communities, which isn't bad. It's just that's what it was. And so if you were building an influencer strategy, you would find the most engaged influencers in the post-sales processes and around post-sales content and engage them as deeply as you can. As things have moved to Web 2.0, what we're seeing is that all of these processes are becoming much more inclusive of external participants. And so now it's becoming much more balanced. You have a lot more external users involved in the envision and develop stage, as well as in the test and release stage, and of course, continuing into the self-service and the support phase. And so the influencer model really spans all of those places in the product cycle. So the business challenge is, how do you find those influencers who are most engaged throughout the product cycle, draw them in at the right points in your product life cycle to give you insight and feedback, and close the loop back with them so that they can really see what changes you made because of their participation? And that's really your opportunity. If I close the loop myself back to that ugly baby analogy, is that's your opportunity to give them birthright, right? To give them ownership of that innovation. From day one.
I see. So I can see how this ties into this sort of concept of Wickonomics, you know, this bestseller that came out. So, in, you know, mass collaboration but also on a global scale. Something that you talked about earlier in this interview was what you now call the six P's of social media, the people, the places, process, platform, patterns, and I think you said participation. Can you comment further in terms of outcomes for the brand?
Yeah, I mean, the outcome for the brand really is a couple of things. One is I think about what is the conversation that you're trying to get after. And for me, you know, the outcome is really the purpose. Why are you in this in the first place? And how are you going to think about harvesting sort of three dimensions of conversation, sort of different than what I described before, and I put it this way, is there will be user-to-user conversation. There'll be brand-to-user conversation and user-to-brand conversation. And so the outcomes are really come from those three clusters of conversation and your ability to go participate in that and derive value from those different conversation points. And so to me, that's where the outcomes really have to find action in this system.
A lot of our audience members are executives and managers and business and in IT. And so that now they're thinking, well, they have to get engaged. How can they translate all of this then into a business framework? Like, can you provide another example?
A couple things. So if I were thinking about this as a framework, or even going a little bit further, how do I justify this, right? A lot of the work actually I find myself doing now with companies is helping them build their internal business case for how will they justify the investment in going forth and creating these sorts of programs and initiatives. And of course it starts with that notion of what problem are we trying to solve, but that's a little bit too simplistic. You might come up with a vision statement, which I think is important. But the next phase of this is really looking at your different functional silos: product development, sales and marketing, service and support, if I simplify the silos that way, and recognizing that there are some different business goals that those different organizations have. On the development side, it may be about product quality and research and development insight or speed of feedback. In sales and marketing, it may be about revenue and image. In service and support, it may be about the quality of the resources and web self-service that you're trying to deliver. So the community value components you're getting back then start to break out into those different dimensions. So the community value that the product organization may be getting is feedback, insight, and a shortened feedback loop. The sales and marketing organization may be getting recommendations or word of mouth or content, that aspirational content that they can use. And the service and support organization may be getting transactional Q&A. They may be getting answers to questions that previously came into the call center. Now people can find via search on their website. And so if you follow that down, then you can start to identify what those functionally specific community KPIs or social media KPIs look like. Again, in the development area, that may be about number of bugs submitted or ideas generated, and the acceptance rate of those ideas would be one way to create an economic model around it. In the sales and marketing place, you may tie it back to Net Promoter. How are we really driving that likelihood to recommend score in our business? What's our share of voice relative to competitors? So of the total conversations happening on the web, what is our share of those conversations relative to our market share, relative to our competitors? And maybe more importantly, what's the tonality of that conversation? How positive is it, or how neutral, or how negative? And if you can categorize that tonality, what initiatives can you drive to impact the tone? And likewise, in service and support, some of those functional specific KPIs could be as simple as number of solutions provided, how long, what's the answer rate in your forums, how long does it take for a question to get answered. Some of those things may be some of the more obvious measures. You may find yourself moving towards more engagement-based metrics versus transactional metrics. So an example of that might be moving to time on site versus page views. In the future, would I rather have a web page that got, that had 1,000 unique users who were engaged, every single day, or would I rather have a site with a lot more page views, but the engagement was, once a month? And I think we're moving to a world where time on site is actually the trump metric over just net page views. Again, it may differ based on the business you're in, but that would be a way to challenge historical assumptions. And then lastly, there are certainly some common community KPIs or social media KPIs that all those functional stacks look at. Things like the participation level, the health of the communities, the influencer engagement across those communities in different business processes, revenue, satisfaction, and loyalty are things that should span all functional orgs. And so that's kind of how I would start building out that business framework, is start identifying what are the unique value points and business metrics that serve each of those functional silos, and how do we create a scorecard and accountability model in the company for driving that. In fact, one of the initiatives I've been working on in a few large enterprises is something I call a community center of excellence or social media center of excellence. And it's if you're in a large company, there's going to be a lot of work happening across your company and touching customers via communities. And so it's how do you create some central body of expertise and knowledge in the brand about this notion of social media strategy, and customer intimacy via these mechanisms, not to control the process, but to share best practices amongst the organization. Because one of the big challenges, if you're a gigantic company, 100,000-person company, 50,000-person company, you know, or in that neighborhood, you may have hundreds of people engaged in talking to users in communities. And one of the things that you often overlook is that opportunity to create community within your own company. And how are you connecting all of those people who have a role in connecting to the community to share best practices, share knowledge, share expertise with one another, share insights that they're capturing, align common goals to get shared metrics for kind of driving this to the next level. And so that's a big part of how I would approach a business framework.
You know, in your presentations, you sometimes talk about the social network effect or the social graph. Can you talk further about that or define these terms?
Yeah, the social graph is you know, gets a lot of academic interest now and a fair amount of blog postings these days. And I describe it this way. The social graph is really just a fanciful term, although I kind of like it, that for the representation of all of the connections amongst people in a community. So if you just picked Facebook, for example, although, you know, this is admittedly a limited example, the idea of the social graph is all of the nodes or the people that are a part of Facebook, and the graph component are the lines between those nodes that represent the metadata for those connections. So loose tie relationships versus strong tie relationships. You and I are friends in Facebook, so we know each other, and you certainly have friends in Facebook who aren't my friends. I have some connection to them through you. And so it's that pass-through effect that starts to document the overall social graph. What I think is actually important about it is it can be radically simplified. And it's sort of a game many of us used to play when we were kids, right? Is if there were 100 of us sitting in a room and I whispered something to the person in the front right of the room and I whispered something to the person in the front left of the room, there's two things at least we could guarantee. Number one is that the rate at which the information would move through the room is different. And number two, the accuracy of that information would change. And so the job of the brand or the corporation is to understand who changed the message and what was the effect of that change. And is that aligned with the business goal I just set out for my social media strategy? So the example that I would use from my past is we looked for a particular behavior in a lot of our technical communities. The behavior we looked for was the answer person, the person who provided an answer to a question. They were the elite person, the highest value person in that conversation, because our business goal was associated with driving self-service content. And so that was the persona, if you will, in the social graph we were most interested in. And we found that once we knew what that behavior looked like, we could better automate our tools and systems to doing identification of who those individuals were so that we could create a more effective connection program between the company and them that leveraged and provided resources that enabled them to continue to do what they're already predisposed to do, which is answer lots of questions. So that's really how I think about that. You know, if you're a marketer, that desired behavior might be different, right? The support executive might be looking for the person who stopped the conversation because they answered a question. The marketing executive might be the person who initiated the conversation, right? The person who shared it with 100 people versus the person who shared it with 3 people. Depending on who those other people were and what actions they took. So it's really about understanding what are all the behaviors going on behind how messages flow through connected people in online groups.
That's kind of fascinating. If we wanted to get further information, what would be your top recommended resources?
Well, there's lots of there's quite a lot that's been written on this topic. Certainly I'll plug my own blog, communitygrouptherapy.com. The fine folks at Forrester I know pretty well and have written quite a lot. Charlene Lee and Jeremiah Ouyang, both I think have written excellent pieces on behalf of Forrester on this overall notion. And so there's a wealth of books out there these days on the topic. But I think some of these blogs are great resources. And probably what I would recommend is, just for sake of giving a short list, is hit those blogs and then go look at their link blog. and see what else, see what they're reading. And that becomes, I think, a very efficient way to kind of start to understand what's going on in the space and enhance sort of the general level of knowledge. And I guess the last piece of advice is sort of the one that I had to give myself a couple of years ago, and I did take it, was to go get involved, right? Is I made a choice to go start blogging. That might not be the best recommendation for everybody because, you know, a lot of people aren't able to stick with their blog. But go get involved in social media. If you don't have a LinkedIn account, go get one. Go get into Facebook and start friending people. Go sign up for Twitter and play. And then you'll question, you know, what the heck is this thing for? But at least you've seen it. But part of it is to go personally experiment with this stuff. There's no better way to learn what its potential uses could be.
You know, Sean, I've asked this question of you before. You know, you have this unique point, I think, in history and the many roles that you've played and just this incredible history of success. So I want you to look into your crystal ball and provide your predictions of future trends and their implications and opportunities.
Well, the one that I'll give you one that I'm particularly interested in, and I'm not sure how it's going to play out, but I really like the potential of this, and it's really all about mobile. I'll describe the following scenario personally, and maybe somebody out there who makes mobile phones and does social networking will build this, and I'll go buy their product. But here's what I would love. I have all these friends in Facebook. I have about 1,000 friends in Facebook, and I travel a lot. I go to some very large conference. I would love to have a system, a mobile application, that when I got off the plane and I turned on my phone, that I would get notification via location-based services for everyone in my network who met some predetermined criteria that I might set that is in that vicinity. Now, a way for me to bridge my online social connections to my offline experiences is one of those scenarios I think is we're on the cusp of. There are a number of companies that are working towards this goal. I haven't personally used any of them yet that I thought was hitting the scenario I wanted. But that's the piece that I'm looking for is what are the scenarios that will bring together the best of these online communities that provide massive scale and connections to the power of offline conversation, which I think has not been lost but is still critical. And so that's the one that I guess I'm spending a lot of time watching and being very curious about and think still has the potential to really change what the interaction model looks like and how people connect with one another.
Sean, you know, you've been traveling a lot. You've been advising Fortune companies and organizations around the world. Do you have a humorous story to share with us or something interesting or innovative or something that, I don't know, is rather unique and that sort of sparked your interest?
Oh, Jesus, you put me on the spot. I should have something really clever to share, and if I thought enough about it, I'd probably come up with a good funny story. But I've seen lots of good innovations that I thought were interesting, and some of them are now kind of popularized. But I really like what Dell has done with IdeaStorm at IdeaStorm.com. It'd be a simple place for your listeners to go check out the example. But you know, it's almost creating American Idol for product feedback and suggestions, and really creating an idea board where users can submit suggestions and in a very simple way vote up or down those suggestions. And I think it's a very scalable way to address that issue of maternity. Is how are you creating birthright? Well, you're giving people an opportunity to provide you suggestions and vote and a scalable mechanism for you to respond back and tell them what you did, which gives them that birthright. Really simple idea, done really smart. I think the other one that kind of popped into my mind when you said that is some work that I've seen Amazon doing around something called the Mechanical Turk. And so they're creating a mechanism around their cloud computing services that would allow a company to essentially take advantage of microcurrencies to drive very large projects, not unlike the Wikonomics example, but attaching economics to it so that you could take an immensely large project like creating tags for 100 million photos, if you will, might be an example, or writing content for a new product or localizing content for a product, and you could create a microcurrency model that allowed the world's labor pool to go and do that work, and you create a payment system against that collective workforce, which I think is really a new set of thinking that is actually based on an old idea. Mechanical Turk is an old idea, you know, 500 or 600 years ago. I can't remember the original story all that well. But being brought to life by Amazon and their cloud computing capabilities, and I think it's quite an interesting scenario.
You know, we've discussed a fair amount. Is there something we missed in our discussion so far? Are there any other comments you'd like to add?
Well, this has been great. I think we've certainly hit a lot. I think probably where I would go back if I were to try to summarize is, you know, it's very easy to kind of get caught up in the ocean of opportunity around social media. And I think where my advice would kind of fall back is to say, yes, indeed, there is an ocean, but the first step is actually figuring out what bay you want to do business in that ocean. So if you think about it as a process, step number one, go listen and categorize that conversation. Step number two, identify those influencers who are at the core of that conversation. Step number three, figure out your preparation, readiness required, and culture change required initiatives that are going to facilitate your participation in that community. Step number four, drive the accountability and process improvement for how you're going to take all that community insight and make it actionable in your company and close the loop back with users. And step number five maybe is just repeat. You know, keep working through that process and driving it forward and trying to keep it simple enough and actionable enough that you can start to see results fairly quickly.
Well, Sean, I indicated you have this global reputation as probably the leading authority now in just a number of areas related to community and social media and so forth. How can our audience connect further with you if they want to, delve into some of the ideas you have or bring you in to help them sort of engage in this area?
Well, I'd love to connect with more people interested on this topic. And you know, certainly there's a couple of easy mechanisms. My blog is probably simplest at communitygrouptherapy.com. People can email me at seanod@live.com. That's seanod@live.com. So I'm pretty reachable there. And you can find me in Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and all the normal social places, fortunately. Or just via search. If the people search on my name, they'll find me. But, you know, I certainly appreciate your comments. And, you know, I've learned an awful lot about this space from a wealth of different people in the industry, as well as many of the participants themselves in these communities. And it certainly is fun to at times try to be a figurehead around it. But in the end, much like the topic itself, it really is an important challenge to kind of think through how do you bring the best group of people from your company together and really start thinking about this not so much as a shiny new tool, but as a business strategy to drive customer touch and customer intimacy. And I think once you start peeling it back that way, you start to realize that this isn't as radically different as it might seem on the surface. It definitely has some different implications and requires great planning. But it is deeply linked to what we've always done as a business, and I think that's part of what makes this much more accessible.
Well, Sean, we thank you for sharing your time with us, and we wish you continued success for the future. And let's do another podcast within a few months and so forth.
Love to. It's always a pleasure talking to you.